I want to welcome everyone. My name is Dana Barocca. I am the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. For those of you joining us for the very first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics for traditional association and trade organizations, for conferences as well as for next generational workshops such as OpenLine, which you'll be experiencing today. OpenLine is the perfect way to share engaging and actual ideas for members of your associations and also within large organizations domestically and internationally. We have an amazing guest today with us. I'm going to introduce in just a minute. We have a full audience also joining us, and we want to make this very interactive. So on your screen, you'll see an area where you can actually submit questions, and we can chat during the program. And so please do that if you have questions along the way. And also, if you want to print out the slides, there's a print icon in the lower right-hand corner, and then you can share the ideas with we want to consider with your team and trusted advisors. Our guest with us today is Rob Hupp, who is a longtime friend, a business colleague, cool guy. Rob is a partner in Rob Hupp Partners. He has over 25 years of experience working with a diverse client base, providing a hands-on approach and client relationship management plans and training programs. Rob has a BA degree in economics from Georgetown University and an MBA from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. I feel privileged to have Rob with us today to share ideas that will help each of us for preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, I wanted to mention, there's a lot of folks that are in the sales arena, sales management, sales training arena that help organizations and have kind of a football type of feel to them, and then they go out, they're going to be all excited, and they leave them feeling good for a little bit, and then everything fades away. Rob isn't one of those kind of guys. Rob is, when he puts something together or shares ideas with a sales team, he builds something to last, and it's and something that's measurable. And that's what has always impressed me regarding Rob and his methodology and work with organizations. He separates himself from the pack in that. And Rob, I'm just grateful to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you very much, Dana, and I appreciate the kind words.
Cool. Well, why don't you take it away? It's all yours.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Dana approached me very early this year. In fact, it may have been late last year, and we talked briefly and converged on the topic of today's program, which we're calling 5 Key Sales Management Tips. As we thought about this this topic, we were struck by a number of things that were going on then and are still going on now. First and foremost, we were seeing, and I hope most of you who've joined us today are seeing a strengthening economy. And you know, I wouldn't go so far as to say the rising tide lifts all boats, but I do think overall, the economy is strengthening, and that is, flowing through to all of our businesses. That said, life in business today isn't necessarily a walk in the park. I think all businesses are facing a number of different challenges. We'll spend a little time today talking about those challenges. One of the keys that I think does sort of challenge all of us is it seems like there are never enough hours in the day or the work week to get through everything that we need to get through. There's lots of what I'm characterizing here as noise or distractions, and those can have a particularly adverse effect on one's sales and one's sales results. So a key overarching theme for the program is something that we're calling back to the basics. I don't think you will hear a whole lot today that's going to be brand new to you. I hope you learn some things and get some ideas, but I think what we're going to try to do is to review and reinforce some basics with a new twist or two.
Also, at the end of our program today, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with Rob. But during the program, again, if you want to submit questions or thoughts, just do them in the chat area, and then we'll try to address as many as we can.
So with that background and context, let me jump into what I refer to here, what we refer to here as tip number one, and that's to adopt and follow a sales process. Well, first of all, what is a sales process? Well, it's a systematic approach. It's a set of steps to selling a particular product or service. What we're talking about today, I believe, is relevant if you're in the product business or in the services business. By following a sales process, this helps to take a lot of the randomness, the emotion, some of the assumptions, guesswork, and risk out for both parties, for both the buyer and the seller. So what when we're talking about this, what we're envisioning is a series of steps, sometimes referred to as gates or hurdles, that the buyer and the seller kind of work through together. And if you get to a point in the process where there isn't an agreement around a particular step or a particular gate, then I think it's incumbent on both parties to say, does it make sense for us to continue discussing and trying to see if there is an opportunity for us to work together. And again, back to the intro slide, I think with all the noise and the distractions and the various pressures that everyone's under, sometimes we tend to forget about using a sales process, and that can have adverse effect on the results. And so, you know, think those of you who are on the call who are in finance and accounting, you follow finance and accounting processes. For those of you who are in operations and logistics, you tend to have processes for what you do. And here we're simply suggesting and recommending that a sales process be employed by the sales organization or the individuals in your organization who fulfill that sales function. Dana, any questions or any clarification that you think would be helpful to this point?
No, I think you're good. I think you're good. You're going to get into the next part, so that's good.
Okay.
We have a number of new people just signed on. On the lower right-hand corner of the screen, you can print out the slides so you can take notes. And, again, if you have questions during the program, please submit them, and we'll also open up the line at the end of the program so you can talk directly to Rob.
Okay. I have advanced to, I believe, what looks to be numbered slide 3, tip number 2, work a prospecting plan. What does this mean? Well, first of all, what is a prospect? It's pretty simple. A prospect is a potential customer or a client. And, you know, prospecting tends to be one of those key kind of lifeblood activities to all businesses. We need to prospect to secure potential entities to work with through that sales process that I just highlighted. So here we're suggesting and recommending that you identify a set of specific activities that you're going to use to generate prospects. Well, what are some good examples of prospecting activities? Well, we have a few here. Networking. And there are all kinds of different ways to network. Networking used to mean, you know, that you went to some sort of a networking event. Now it can mean, you know, there can be social networking through technology. There are all kinds of different ways to network, and we'll spend a little more time on that. A second example would be a sales letter. There are some very powerful techniques around constructing sales letters as a way to reach out to potential customers or clients in a very cost-effective way and see if you can pique some interest on their part, in which you can then have a dialogue with them and see if there is an opportunity potentially to do some business together. And then the third and final example, one that we're all very familiar with, that of referrals, where, you know, we all have professional networks, and so there's often an opportunity for us to make referrals and in turn to secure referrals. So in thinking about a prospecting plan, we need to identify the specific prospecting activities, and then what we really want to do is we want to set some periodic target levels for each of those activities. So, you know, you might say, okay, you know, we're going to generate 10 sales letters per month. We're going to attend so many networking events. We're going to do some online networking as well. And we're going to endeavor to make 3 referrals per month. The idea here is to develop that plan, work the plan, track your results over a period of time, and if you see that a particular prospecting activity is generating a higher yield, you might shift some of your resources to doing more of that activity and less of some other activity. So this is it's an ongoing process of prospecting, seeing your results, fine-tuning your mix of activities, reviewing your results. And at a point in time, you will achieve a balance where you'll see that, yes, we are, you know, doing activities that are generating prospects, and the level of effort is something that we can sustain as well. So, again, I'm sorry, Dana, go ahead, please.
A question came in on the sales letters. What are your thoughts on having a target list, doing literally a paper type of sales letter versus an electronic sales letter?
That's an interesting question. I think it's probably going to be less expensive to do it electronically. I think, though, today folks get fewer paper letters, so you actually might get a higher yield from your paper letter activities. I think the thing that is key about the sales letter, you know, is to keep it relatively short and to target it to the types of firm and the industries that you serve, so that it isn't just a kind of a long list of all the things that you can do or could do. It is going to be more targeted toward specific issues and challenges that you believe the recipient may have.
And how do people find that out other than guessing?
Well, I think some of it is probably educated guessing. Some of it also is if you have worked with other firms in the same industry, you may know, you know, issues and challenges that, you know, that small community banks are facing. So if you're going to write a sales letter to some presidents of community banks, you know, if you've worked in that space or you've researched that space, there's a fairly good likelihood that you can identify two or three challenges that those bank presidents are facing that you could potentially engage them in some discussion around.
That can be in any industry, so identify the hot button. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
One more question on that, Rob. If people are doing more of the traditional letter, do you recommend having a reply device within it, something they can check off and send back?
Yeah, I think making it easy, Dana, for folks to reply or respond is important. I also think that for most sales letters, you are going to want to place a follow-up call to the recipient.
Okay. So letter, response device, call, and keep it simple. And don't put a lot of junk in it. Just keep it a simple letter. Don't go spending money on all the printing and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right, Dana.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we've talked about working our prospecting plan, tracking our results, and fine-tuning the plan as we go. Okay. Tip number three, and I think in a sense this may be one of the more important of the five. You know, measure what it is you want to impact. Okay. Well, in sales and in sales management, we can directly control two things. We really can't directly control the sales results. That's unfortunate, but that's the reality. What are the things we can directly control? Well, we can directly control our behavior and our attitude. So on the behavior side, it really comes down to prospecting, which we've talked about or touched on, and the sales process. That's really where our behavior is most focused. So here, you know, we want to measure, as we've talked about already, our prospecting activity, and we're going to want to follow that sales process and track where we are in the sales process for each and every opportunity that we're pursuing. So here are some examples of metrics that you might consider tracking. One would be, you know, how many new prospects have I generated, okay? How many initial meetings or conversations have I held? And then toward the end of the sales process, you know, how many prospects have I either qualified or disqualified? You know, again, these are fairly straightforward, but by tracking our activity levels around prospecting in the sales process, we're going to be spending our time more productively. We're going to be, you know, not getting distracted and diverted with, you know, paperwork and other things that, while they're important, they tend not to, you know, help us in generating new sales. And then on our attitude, this is probably a little bit more difficult to quantify. I know some folks, I'm sure on this call, do some level of journaling, journaling is an effective way to, you know, track your behavior and your attitude. And if on a particular day or series of days you're assessing that your attitude is a little less than you'd like it to be, then I think you do need to potentially do some self-examination, you know, reach out to a colleague or a friend or a mentor and just see, hey, you know, I am just, you know, I'm struggling a bit with the work that I'm doing here, you know, what are some things that, that we potentially could do to improve my attitude, which when you do that, it generally helps on the behavior side as well. When you're a little discouraged, your behavior, your productive, constructive behavior tends to suffer. So,
Rob, do you recommend, I've been to a couple of our clients recently, and I noticed that they had big screen TVs for their sales department. Not that they weren't playing soap operas, but rather they actually had where sales were at and keeping track of it on a daily basis, maybe weekly basis, and everybody could see, it's pretty transparent where people were at. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that approach, as most approaches, has pluses and it has minuses. I think before I would go there, I would probably want to work with each of the sales reps to help them put in place a system that helps to support them in terms of their behavior and their attitudes. And then once we got that up and running, I would, you know, probably take a look at, you know, what's the likely impact of us sharing sales results with each other on a more frequent basis.
So be respectful about it, in other words.
Yeah, and I think that's real essential. I think that's real essential. And that's why I would suggest that our leaders on the call, you know, start with working with the in individuals and then, you know, take it up to the team level next in terms of the results.
The other thing is, what if salespeople obviously have to show their worth by closing deals, but how does one measure if they're planting seeds that may not pay off right away?
Right.
Is that part of the percentage mix for long term versus short term?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Dana, there are four key indicators that I think are most important for sales folks, and you know, this would be folks who have a sales title, or in some organizations they don't have a sales title, but that's one of their key functions. The four that I think are generally the most important would include prospecting. You know, how many new prospects and new opportunities did this individual create? The second would be opportunity development. Okay, how many opportunities and what type of opportunities did the individual meaningfully contribute to? Third would be something that I would call, bid and proposal support. Okay, for a number of people, I'm sure on our call, they are submitting bids and proposals. And then, so, you know, how has an individual contributed there? And then fourth, and by far the most important, would be sales closed. But I don't think you can look at sales closed in isolation. I think you really need and want to look at all four of those factors. Now, if over an extended period of time a resource isn't closing sales, then I think you have to ask some you know, fairly basic and fundamental questions.
Thank you.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. Tip number four. This maybe strays a little out of traditional sales management, but I think it is increasingly important for all of us, and that's to evaluate the emerging social media and its impact on your business or businesses. You know, what is social media? Well, I extracted a pretty simple definition from Wikipedia. It's the use of web-based and mobile technologies to turn basic communications into an interactive dialogue. So, you know, I suspect most of our folks on the call today, you know, are familiar with, you know, Facebook. They're familiar with LinkedIn. Dana's open line here is really also an application of social media, because what we're doing is we're turning communications into a much more interactive dialogue. So, I mean, the key for each of us is how can these technologies help to position and promote your businesses. And, you know, there are great opportunities to do some amount of, if you will, electronic prospecting. There are also great opportunities to showcase an individual or an organization's expertise and qualifications. So I suspect the vast majority of folks, Dana, who are with us today have considered and are in the process of adopting social media, you know, to help their businesses grow and prosper, and it can have a significant impact in sales and sales management as well. Any questions around social media and the impact of social media?
Anybody want to submit anything? Again, we're going to open up the line shortly, but if you want to submit something, it's a huge topic of how to integrate it into your sales process or into your marketing process. And companies sometimes are still scratching their head, and there are others that are moving forward with it. But it's certainly here. It's not going to go anywhere. It's going to get more complex as it moves along.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part is the technology itself, I think, in a sense, is getting simpler to use, but I think to make and take full advantage of it, folks probably need to be a bit more creative around how they're going to use it to help their organization, you know, stand out from the crowd.
Rob, how much of the sales budget, or if there is even a percentage, that you put in, invested into the web design or
mm-hmm.
some type of interactive
mm-hmm.
activity, or
right.
having maybe some companies are bringing on part-time or full-time people, and all they do is they deal
sure.
with Facebook and LinkedIn and electronic
yes.
stuff. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I'm not sure, Dana. As of yet, I've seen particular metrics that I would be all that comfortable with sharing, because I think this is all still evolving very quickly. But to the point that you just made, a number of organizations, big and small, are, you know, bringing in folks from the outside, in some cases on a part-time basis, in some cases on a full-time basis, to help them to develop and implement and maintain their social media strategy and their associated social media plans. And so this, I suspect, is a topic that you've either covered in another open line session or will be covering in future sessions.
Right. A question on from a sales standpoint. For a salesperson to spend time doing blogs
mm-hmm.
versus going out there and doing direct prospecting,
mm-hmm.
Any thoughts around that? Or?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, blogging is a great way to share stories, and sharing stories is a great way to build rapport with clients and prospective clients. So I think it would be, in the vast majority of cases, it would be a worthwhile activity for sales reps to spend, you know, an hour or so a week, you know, doing a blog. Now, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense to have every rep blogging every week. Maybe you have a rotational schedule, and so folks are, you know, blogging, you know, once every 6 to 8 weeks, depending on the size of your sales team.
Okay, but that's really important. What you said is a week, not a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference issue. I've heard some people say, oh, you know, I get to spend at least an hour or maybe even 2 hours a day on the web and blogging and doing things. But, okay, that's interesting you brought that up.
Well, I think what you're looking to do there is you're looking to tell stories that help prospects see how it might make sense for them to work with you. So if there's a particular problem that a sales rep helped a customer solve, that would be a great thing to work into a blog post.
Okay. And is it worthwhile to have a PR firm do some of this, or is that putting money down the?
Well, again, I wouldn't make a kind of a sweeping answer or generalization. I think it probably depends on the size of the organization.
Okay.
You know, if you're a global powerhouse, it may make sense to have a public relations or a media and communications firm help you. If you're not, this is something that you potentially could take on yourself. There are also you know, smaller firms that potentially could help you with that. I think one thing that is important. There's probably a need for some guidelines around blogging and blog content. And so I would suggest to folks who are with us today that you might want to, you know, ensure that you have some basic guidelines around, you know, what to blog and what not to blog. My son has an internship with an airline that I shouldn't name, but one of his first day on the job, one of the orientation topics they put the interns through was, you know, guidelines around blogging and the use of social media in business. So this is something that I think businesses, large and small, you know, probably want to make some upfront investment in.
Okay. Very good point. Very good point.
Okay. Let's go to tip number five. This is again, you know, probably deviating out a little bit away from sales management, but I think it's terribly important. I think it's to integrate professional development into your business plans. And I think there are, you know, a couple of fundamental questions that I outline here. First, you know, how are your markets and the clients you're serving changing? This is essential to stay in front of if, in fact, you're going to have products and services that the clients and markets are looking for. And then to be able to offer those new products or services, what new skills and expertise does your organization need to develop to remain competitive? And I think, you know, the stresses and strains and challenges of the last X number of years have, you know, gotten a number of organizations away from focusing on needed professional development. So I think the time is here, you know, to ensure that our business plans do have a learning and development component. And then I just suggest here some relatively low-cost ways that some new capabilities can be acquired. You know, there are all kinds of tools out there. There's, you know, there are podcasts that are excellent. There are, you know, programs, webinars. There's some good self-study material that's readily available. There are professional organizations that can help each of you to ensure that professional development is a key element of your go-forward business plan. And I think, you know, this isn't really intended as a plug for sales consulting or sales training, but I do think I would, you know, look at, you know, what is it that your sales organization needs to know for them to be as productive and successful as they can be.
And that's a constant, isn't it? Because you got to keep everybody's mind sharp, not get gold dull. Keep
yes.
them thinking about other market opportunities.
Yes.
How to get out there.
Yes.
It's a constant part of the selling meetings. Rob, how often should a sales team be getting together, or the manager being meeting with the salesperson? Once a week?
I think that at an absolute minimum, those meetings and interactions should occur probably twice a month, and I'm generalizing with that answer. And, you know, that would include a combination of, if you will, team meetings that, you know, could be done virtually by teleconference if need be. And then I also think that there is benefit to having, you know, a one-on-one meeting as well.
So it's not just going over numbers, but rather
having
some spirit of core, ideas, keep
right.
generating and fresh. Okay.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there are, you know, benefits to reviewing the results, but as you're suggesting, Dana, there are, I think, even bigger benefits around, you know, the discussing, you know, what are the challenges that are being faced, what are some ideas about expanding existing accounts, what are some ideas and strategies around acquiring new accounts, et cetera.
And really spend the time.
Yes.
Listen. Okay, and helping.
Yeah. It's really more about listening than it is about probably talking and telling.
Okay. Rob, question for you. I know we're going to be wrapping up in just a few minutes. Or do you have anything else in this slide? There we go. Question. There's a lot of. I was giving a talk yesterday to Sherm in Orange County, and the Orange County Register in California is doing a whole conference on virtual workforce. And I hear from different companies. There's some sales departments will say, "No, you have to come in every day and sit at this desk. I want to see you dialing, pick up the phone, using your computer. They want to see a live body there, and so they feel the discipline can only take place if they're with a manager or mommy or daddy standing over them." But I'm also seeing other companies that are taking advantage of hiring the right salesperson that has that gumption and work ethic and can work from their home just fine and check in the office once or twice a week or a couple times a month if they're out of the area maybe.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on all of that? This is somewhat new.
Right. I mean, I'm seeing the same, if you will, alternative models. That there are some more traditional organizations that tend to believe that if the salesperson isn't in front of them and isn't coming into a physical office, that they're, you know, probably not prospecting and doing the selling behaviors they need to. I do think that organizations, for a variety of reasons, however, are looking at it a little bit more. What's a good word? I think they're looking at it in some new and more open ways, where they insist that salespeople participate in certain regular meetings, and those could be in a physical office or on a conference call or a webinar. They also insist that sales folks submit their weekly activity, their weekly reports around prospecting and other sales behaviors. And so I don't think yet we have definitive results that would say one approach is preferable to the other. I think, as I think your comment alluded to, if you have sales folks who are disciplined and who can get the work done outside of the office, that's probably going to be a better long-term strategy.
And also, for the company I know has been successful with people that are working remotely a good percentage of the time, they also have the infrastructure. In other words, when someone logs on, the sales manager can see when they're on, and they can see what they're doing and who they're dialing and what the notes are. There's no mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen some companies where they don't have the infrastructure, and they're not able to see things electronically, and
right.
Then it becomes, what are they really doing?
Right. I think that's a great point, and that in infrastructure has become much more affordable for our organizations, both small and large.
I would say, for those of you on the call today or listening to this in the future, that you want to take the time to have, it doesn't take a lot of money to do this, but have the electronic infrastructure so you're capturing the calls that are being made as far as notes and what the process is as far as where the lead is, and there's a number of programs for doing that, Goldmine, Salesforce, Act. It's just a matter of how you're going to design it. Any other thoughts on that, Rob? Or?
No. I think those are great points, Dana. And, yeah, the tools are readily available and, becoming more readily available all the time.
Okay. I'm going to open up the line in just a minute here. What I want to do is, in the past, I've been asked by people who have participated to not record when people are asking questions or commentary going on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to close down this portion of the program in just in a second here, and then we'll open up the line after that. I'm just going to take us to the last slide here. In just a few minutes, we're going to open the line up again, and you can talk directly to Rob. You'll see in your screen area to register for our next open line program, which is entitled The Keys to Using Performance Incentives. It's an outstanding program. We did it a year ago. Many people said, do it again. So we are. So please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself and let us know if you'd like your staff members and of your association or other colleagues to attend. Space is limited, so please sign up as soon as you can. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. So please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Rob and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Rob to have a further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, have some one-to-one time, or just to share and bounce ideas around, Rob's contact information is on your screen. And we'll be opening up the line again in just a second after I turn the recording equipment off. Just one last paragraph I want to close with. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information about our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Hold the line. Let me turn the recording equipment off by just pressing one button here, and then we're going to open the line up.